So, well, first of all, a big thank you to the four speakers. They were fascinating and certainly very diverse contributions. I was hoping, actually, in the interest of stimulating debate, to disagree with what they said, but I struggled to find much that I disagreed with. But I think in the interest of keeping this reasonably brief, despite not being constrained, what I've done is to pick out three themes out of the many that were touched on, three which I think are particularly critical, and where I'd just like to say a few words and offer my own perspective on these. The first one that I think both Amir and Mike touched on was, is there substance here? Is this hype? Is there any reality? And I think, as you heard, there's a mix of both. So I agree very much with Mike that as far as we can see, we're a long way off general human-level artificial intelligence. In fact, we're sufficiently far off that it's difficult to predict when that may come. There may be surprises, but at the moment it seems very far off. So does that mean it's all been overhyped? Well, my view is no. There is actually something at the heart of this that it is quite fundamental and quite transformational. And it goes back to the nature of how software gets created. Because if you go back to the very first software developer, Ada Lovelace, she wrote software one instruction at a time. And in a sense, that's what software developers do today. They don't just tell the machine what to do. They tell the machine how to do it one step at a time. Of course, they're very productive. They'll call in a library of millions of instructions written by others. But ultimately, it comes down to telling the machine step by step how to do a task. Machine learning is radically different. We do something completely different. We don't program the machine to solve a task. Instead, we write very different software, software which allows the machine to be adaptive. And then we teach the machine how to solve the task using data. And as you heard in the presentations there, sometimes it's much the same kind of software. For example, deep neural networks are very popular right now. That same, more or less the same software, even the exact same code, might be used one day to deal with a problem in speech, the next day with a problem in speech and in computer vision, the next day something in natural language, and so on. So to me, that is very fundamental. Just a little comment about sort of the timing of all of this. I mean, we heard, I think Amir gave a very nice history of machine learning. You may wonder, well, if this goes back so many decades, why now? Why is this suddenly taking off? What we're seeing is a confluence of three factors, but these factors are not created equal. First of all, there are developments in algorithms. The algorithms have gotten better, and deep neural networks is probably the most significant of those. But in a sense, they're tweaks rather than radically different algorithms. The second factor, I think, is perhaps in some ways more important, which is the availability of large-scale computation. Today, we have exascale computers. So if you imagine two 16-digit numbers, multiply them together, get the answer accurate to 16 digits. Today, we have machines that can do a million, million, million of those per second. Now, these machines are called data centers. They're the size of aircraft hangars and full of computers. But that is the scale of compute that's used today in state-of-the-art machine learning. And then the third, of course, the most important ingredient is data. And data is really at the heart of this. We probably spend a lot of time talking about data. Data is sort of the new Moore's Law. In fact, I see this transformation as like it's a somewhat broken analogy, but I think it's worth thinking about. If you think about the history of computer hardware, we started off with brass gear wheels, we went to valves and then transistors and then logic gates, integrated circuits and so on. The hardware got faster and faster and better and cheaper. But there was a singular moment, and the singular moment was when we went from building things up out of components to printing the circuits. We went to large-scale integration. And that was the beginning of Moore's Law, the exponential growth in the number of transistors on a chip. And that's why all these big companies exist, that's why we have AI, that's why we're here debating this evening. I think the transformation from software that's handcrafted to software that's learned from data is, I suspect, may prove to be a singular moment in software in the same way we had that singular moment in hardware. And indeed, it's powered by data, if not driven by data, it's powered by data, and the amount of data in the world is growing exponentially. It's a new Moore's Law. So I think the hype about AI taking over the world and killer robots and so on is exactly that. But I think there is something very profound and very transformational that will influence almost every aspect of society. I'll make a second. So my second point was about data. I'll keep this very brief, but I wanted to just emphasise the fact that because this depends upon data, one of the Well, actually, many of the issues focus down to the nature of the data, the ownership of the data, who gets to use the data, who gets to use the output of the data, and so on. Many aspects have been discussed. I won't dwell on those. I just want to highlight one extra facet of this, and it's a risk that I see in this revolution. I think it's perhaps not unreasonable to call it a revolution. It's the risk of things backfiring, in the sense that I personally believe there are tremendous societal benefits that can be had from machine learning and from its widespread application. Inevitably, there will be a few missteps. There have been some already. You heard about them. I think there is a risk that, given a few inevitable bumps in the road, public reaction may turn against the technology and we may throw the baby out with the bathwater. And so I particularly wanted to commend Claire and the Royal Society for producing the machine learning report, and also Wendy Jerome for the AI report. And not just for writing the reports, but also the various events and activities that the Royal Society, Royal Academy of Engineering, British Academy and so on have been organising to bring this out into the public debate. I think it's tremendously important to be on the front foot with the public debate about this in order that we can assure it that this really has a good landing, that delivers as much of that benefit as it can. And I'll just finish by picking up on a comment that Wendy made around skills, really just emphasise that this is one of the most critical things now in the industry. It's particularly affecting right now the big, you know, the handful of major companies that are focusing on AI. There is a tremendous skills shortage. My prediction is it will get worse before it gets better, and the reason is that other companies who don't think of themselves as machine learning companies are discovering the benefits of machine learning, but realizing that today this requires very specific skills that are in fairly short supply. So I think the initiatives like the Master's Programme in Machine Learning and many other initiatives are just incredibly important. We really will face an increasing skills gap for a number of years to come. I think this is a place, though, where, because of our world-class education system in the UK, it gives us a unique opportunity. I think we're in a great position to train up the next generation of researchers and engineers and practitioners in this field. And my closing remark is going to address a topic that is of great importance to me and to Wendy and to many others here, which is around diversity, and particularly gender diversity. I often very proudly say that my lab does far better than average in hiring women into technical roles, but as Wendy will be quick to point out, that's a pretty low bar. The proportion of women in technical roles in the industry generally in machine learning right now is pitifully small. But just to end on a note of optimism, one of the things that I believe in profoundly, and it shapes the whole structure and organisation of my research lab, is if you want to go beyond simply publishing papers about machine learning algorithms, if you actually want to deliver machine learning in the real world, this is fundamentally a cross-disciplinary activity. We're very interested in healthcare applications. That's the biggest growth area for my lab right now. And if you think about a healthcare application delivered in the real world, at its heart, maybe a machine learning algorithm, and machine learning researchers will play an important role there, but it gets built, and so engineers play a key role. But it gets used by people, so it better be designed. And you'd better be thinking hard about the user experience. So people who work in human-computer interaction are also vital. And getting those cross-disciplinary teams together, I think, is essential if this is going to land well for society. So I'd like to end on a little note of optimism. One of the reasons I think that we've been able to do relatively well in my lab in bringing more women into the domain is because we take a very cross-disciplinary approach. And I've noticed the healthcare domain in particular is one that seems to be very appealing. We're getting very large numbers of women applying across the whole spectrum of skills that we need in order to make this machine learning opportunity a great success. So thank you.